Hello everybody, welcome back to Right to the Source. My name is Robin Harrison and I'm here, as ever, with the Stimpy to my Wren, Mr. Ed Birkin.
I'm lost.
Wren and Stimpy. Wren and Stimpy.
Okay, so there's two Wrens that I know. There's the bird and there's the kitchens.
No, that's with a W. This is just R-E-N.
R-E-N.
I'm pretty sure Wren was actually based on Peter Lorre, you know, the actor from... He was a German actor who was in Casablanca. He was in that film M. I think he did a lot of early horror work. It was very funny. It was very...
Horror is not my genre.
This is... Well, no. It's, well, nothing's your genre. Country.
Rom-coms are my genre.
No, teen comedies.
Look.
American Pie isn't a rom-com, Ed.
No, that's not a rom-com. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Fantastic film.
Okay.
In fact, the whole Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey kind of films were very good. Yeah.
Okay. I can't say I've seen them, but I will endeavour to watch all
He's
of
an
them.
Interesting guy, Matthew McConaughey. He's fantastic at rom-coms. Mm-hmm. And he was very good at some dark stuff. What was the one where he was, is it True Detectives?
Yeah.
Like that, I don't think I even finished that. That was too scary for me. He lost loads and loads of weight for a film where he just became like...
Emaciated, yeah, because he was playing a guy who, I think, contracted AIDS, the Dallas Buyers Club. He won an Oscar for that.
And then he was talking about running for governor in Texas and stuff. It's quite an interesting guy.
Yeah, it's bold.
Do you know what emancipated means? You should do, you're a journalist. So I accidentally used the word emancipated instead of emaciated the other day. Mm-hmm. And got corrected. And then I didn't really realise what it... No, of course you should be corrected. I didn't realise what it was. Do you know what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a word.
Tell me.
It's to be released from the bonds of slavery.
Well, I've checked that. But in the more modern thing, it's to be legally released from your parents.
Yeah, there is that kind of emancipation. Like Macaulay Culkin did it.
Yes.
From Home Alone, which that's kind of your level. You've seen that, haven't you?
Let's not discuss why Macaulay Culkin did it. But apparently, like a few child actors and people do it. In part, apparently, makes contracts easier. But I think we're going off topic because before we go into the gambling stuff, I want to say congratulations to you on your Celtic team doing the double with the oldest manager probably in the world, Marcin O'Neill, coming back. But also, it kind of leaves a bitter taste given how it was effectively cheating. Not your fault, but that penalty against Motherwell in injury time, which clearly wasn't a penalty, which meant that you would have had to beat Hearts by over 3 goals in the last game of the season, and Hearts just deserve the title. But congratulations.
Hearts deserved the title, but Hearts didn't win the title.
Yeah, they got done over by decisions. But anyway.
They didn't get done over by decisions. In the final game of the season, they took the lead and they got done over by a better team. No, like, there were points of last season where we were atrocious. Like, absolutely atrocious. But Martin O'Neill, twice, you know, it wasn't even that he didn't... Well, I mean, he got a few kind of loan signings in January, but ultimately he worked with the players that he had and he just reinstilled belief and drive in these players. And, I mean, it's going to be a very different team next year.
Like Arsenal, which again is disappointing, but you know they just went on a run and won the games from whatever point they didn't until the end of the season, and ultimately that won the title. So,
but I mean, honestly, we ground out the results. You know, we really kind of ground these out. Like, Hearts did really well, but I think Hearts, I mean, obviously they've now lost Shankland to some club, which I think is probably going to sting more than losing the title.
Well, look, we don't need a full rundown of Scottish football because our listener base isn't that interested, but they are interested in probably the biggest news in sports in the past week. So loyal fans will know, clearly, or listeners, we'll call them fans, will know that the Oilers is my NHL team. But I do have a second team, which people don't think you should really have in sport, but soft spot having seen them. And the Las Vegas Golden Knights through to the Stanley Cup final, which is effectively the Super Bowl of the NHL. So why is this such big news? Because The Athletic, which is the New York Times sports division, they had, I think it was 28 of their reporters in the semi-final, best of seven games, first of all. Knights were playing Colorado Avalanche, who were the best team in the regular season and favourites to win it. And 27 of the 28 reporters said that the Avalanches would go through. 25 of those said the Avalanches would do it in either a clean sweep of four straight wins or within five games. Not only did the Knights go through, they beat the Avalanches 4-0. Like, against every single person's prediction. So, go Knights. The problem is they're pretty hated because all the other franchises have long-suffering fans who have been waiting for years or decades, you know, to get the Stanley Cup. And the Vegas Knights are now, I think, the third final in a few years. So, it feels like they're bored of it. But anyway, it is a bit of a joke.
Yeah, and also I'm very glad that you've got a fallback if the Oilers fall short.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a shame. But it shows that someone's discussing about, you know, saying, well, like the Avalanche not winning is, you know, just choking. It shows the coach. And he said, imagine if with the Bulls hadn't won with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. And they made the point that it's just completely different because if you could win the Stanley Cup with two of the best players in the league, then the Oilers should be winning the Stanley Cup every year.
Yeah.
Because they have by far the best player in the league.
Connor McDavid.
But that's just not the case in the NHL. That is in basketball. Which is why they're actually, and we don't want to go on to this, but why they're looking at changing the basketball where there's something called tanking.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So for those who don't, it's where teams who aren't going to do very well just purposefully lose the games towards the end of the season to get a higher draft pick because someone in basketball can make such a difference to the team by because of the amount they play as well and on the pitch. Whereas in ice hockey, you play very few minutes. Anyway,
yeah, of course.
Nuances of sport. Should we get on to gambling?
Yeah, we're 8 minutes into the recording and we've not yet actually talked about gambling, so it's probably a good idea to add some of that in. So today we're going to talk about three different things. We're going to touch on Caesars, we're going to talk about Austria, and we're going to talk about Mexico. Where do we want to start?
Well, no, I was going to... Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Mexico.
Okay.
Right. Let's start with Mexico. Yeah, so Mexico. So tell us what's on your mind about Mexico, Ed.
Well, Mexico is interesting at the moment. So technically North America, but most people look at it around the LATAM region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
It's the second biggest market behind Brazil. Now, why is it interesting at the moment? It's been growing very quickly, without doubt. So it's had a 40% online growth CAGR between 22 and 2024. Okay, so we have the market at around 4 billion US dollars onshore, 800 million offshore. Should probably check that before I say it. Now we have 80% onshore. I lie. 4.3 billion combined. For onshore and offshore, $3.4 billion onshore.
So 80% onshore, you said. Okay, so that's impressive.
Well, yeah, and some people say no, this is a big offshore market. The fact is, Caliente is just so big. I mean, it's gone down from 70-80% of the market to 53% at the moment. Right. It's just such a big player that you need to take that into account. And then other big players in the region have largely come ashore, you know, the likes of Bet365, then you have some local players, PlayDwat, etc. Now, so we've had really good, strong growth, very loose regulation, quite frankly.
Yeah.
They're allowed to kind of do what they want. So again, that obviously encourages people to come on shore. There are very few restrictions.
Mm-hmm. And it's sub-licensing, isn't it? Through a land-based operator for digital.
So two things have happened. So you've got that tailwind, but then they increased the tax rate to 50% of GGR.
Yep.
Now, that's going to have an impact. The interesting thing about Mexico is it's been characterized by very, very elevated levels of spend, media spend. Particularly from Caliente, and then everyone else has had to follow.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not exactly getting into works because there's Caliente where they have profit share with Playtech and maybe incentivized with certain things, but they've had high levels of marketing spend. So that is going to be cut.
Okay.
You can't be having 50% marketing spend and 50% tax. So they'll be reducing marketing spend to more normalized levels, which will reduce growth. But also you offer a higher base. You know, growing at 40% a year isn't possible to kind of do into perpetuity.
Okay.
On the flip side, you've got the tailwind of the World Cup. Yeah, and they're one of the three co-hosts with the US and Mexico and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that's going to equate to about $2.5 billion of extra turnover through their sports books. In terms of GGR, it really depends. A tournament, especially when you've got such an expanded tournament and with some of the, let's be honest, crap teams. You know, are there going to be upsets? Is there going to be favourites winning? How's the margin going to be? But it's good for customer acquisition. But the other bit that's then interesting is actually what's happened in terms of the share. So over time, we've seen Bet365 come up pretty strongly. We've seen PlayDwat, Cadera, BetMexico. I've all done, you know, kind of got decent-ish market share, but Caliente's been the runaway, albeit down from 84% in 2020 to 53% in 2024.
Yeah.
And 2025. Now, what happened in November 25 is the licensing partner of Bet365 and Betano got in trouble or accused of some financial irregularities.
Okay.
And they got their license revoked. So effectively, Bet365 and Betano got blocked. Their traffic went to zero. So we've seen a shift over the past 6 months in share, because between them, they had 365 at 11%, 3% for 2-3% for Betano. So around 14% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how has that shifted? To be honest, Caliente's held pretty steady. Three main beneficiaries we've seen are PlayDwat, who was the third biggest operator, Novibet, who was only been in the market a couple of years, he seems to have done pretty well, and then Brazino 777, who was again just kind of entered the market a bit. So you got
better. I always think of them as a Brazilian operator,
so do I.
Yeah.
And look, they've only got, according to web traffic, 3% share, but actually that still puts them at 7th, you know, in the market.
Wow.
So, you know, around the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a good market. I think it will be interesting to see, you know, if they start tightening up. There's been discussion for years about, you know, tightening up regulations, hasn't there, around things, and whether that acts as a catalyst for more external investment in the country. Or in the gambling sector, because people know it's kind of solid.
Yeah, but I mean, is the 50% tax rate is going to be a bit of a deterrent to that?
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to cast dispersions on the operators, but you know, there's also 50% tax rate. I don't know how good the reporting is being tied into systems, so whether all operators pay that or not. You know, I know we shouldn't say that not all operators pay the right amount of tax. But like we've seen that in Peru, you know, that now the tax has gone up significantly in the past couple of months because they've all had to integrate into the regulator systems. So what the rate of tax is going to be versus the headline rate of tax, and clearly that has a big impact on the market growth. So
I think that's fair to say. But at the same time, a 50% rate is a bit eye-watering. Because if people are looking at returns, and you mentioned earlier it's, you know, it's been characterised by high media spend.
Mm.
So that's obviously going to then tail off.
Yeah.
And generally what you kind of see happens, I mean, Italy being the extreme example, is that benefits the incumbents.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, a lot of the, well, yes, it benefits the incumbents, and I suppose also the kind of local operators with strong brands, mm-hmm. which is why Caliente's done well. But, you know, Bet Mexico, Play Duarte, Codere.
I think for Codere, that's Codere Online, just to be clear, because obviously those businesses are separate. I think Mexico's their biggest market.
Yeah, but, you know,
they built good business there.
Yeah, Mexico and Spain, they do mm-hmm. good business in. The two big ones, aren't they, really? So, look, I think it's a good market, but having more regulation, I don't think would be a bad thing, because I suppose one of the concerns is whether they just say, well, actually, these licenses don't count, or something happens. A bit like you're seeing in Brazil, where mm-hmm. you have regulation, and like, you've got Lula trying to shut down the whole gambling sector, which, you know, we discussed, we're not going to talk about Brazil, you know, probably what happened, he's appeasing the evangelicals, blah, blah, blah. But you just don't want, a Wild West works in some respects of freedom to do stuff, but actually having regulations around it and a bit more certainty.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, I suppose, like, just one kind of point on Brazil, it is quite interesting because the general line is no one ever lost an election over gambling.
Yeah.
But I think what Brazil is kind of showing is that someone might win an election over gambling.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, we'll, but let's not get into Brazil again, because we always talk about Brazil. It's obviously very interesting, but we like to be diverse in this podcast. So let's talk about Austria.
Yes.
Yes. So
why don't you lead with Austria?
Okay, very happy to. So Austria this week, the Ministry of Finance has, released/leaked a bill which has set out plans to end the current monopoly held by Casinos Austria's Win Today and liberalise the online gambling market for the first time. Which,
now, can you clarify this, please? Because my initial research, / my buddy from ChatGPT, was mm-hmm. suggesting that there was not as much suggestion that it was liberalising it, more they were just opening for retender for the licence in late 27. But some of, you know, your fellow media, gaming media outlets kind of talked mm-hmm. about this expanding it to a number of different operators.
Yeah. Yeah, so the draft actually says, let me just quote it exactly. Several providers will be able to offer online gambling in Austria in future. So it's not just retendering, it is bringing in multiple people to the market. Okay. So, because obviously there's only one license, as you mentioned, it runs until 2027. There's been a lot of talk.
September, it's towards the end of 27, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of talk, and that could be extended if the process is ongoing, if there's legal challenges, which has delayed it, which is, you know, just look at Germany. That can really delay these processes.
All Win are the only, so Casino Austria, which All Win own.
Would
anyone else be against it opening up?
I don't think so. You know, like online sports betting is obviously available, but online gaming is not.
But on a regional level, so what would be helpful for me particularly, because there is no actual list of who's, you cannot get a list of actually who's licensed online sports betting.
No.
Because it's all regional level, they don't publish it. So actually, if at the same time they move to a federal level sports betting, that would be fantastic. But I think that's mm-hmm. just wishful thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's going to be lottery stays a monopoly, no cap on the number of licensees. But This is the world we live in. There are various stings in the tail. So
or deposit limit and max mistakes. This looks.
Oh, like, I'm not. Well, before you even get to that, back taxes. Yeah, back taxes. So, so we have, you know, Imogen Goodman obviously covering this with some fantastic work. They will be required to settle outstanding Austrian court rulings and pay any backdated taxes.
He's that effect. Bet at home.
Potentially bet at home, potentially Mr. Green. Because think about the player losses cases. Mm. These are coming from the Austrian court. So it's, you know, so people are kind of tied in there. I think the minimum share capital is something like 10 million. So in terms of the limits, so here's an interesting one. So, you know, there's all that talk about under 20, but there was all that talk around under 25 being the new underage people almost, because there was kind of specific controls from them, places like the Netherlands, UK, stuff like that. Austria has added a year onto that, so it's players under the age of 26, I think it's €250 a week. Older players, it's something...
A week or a month?
A week.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's not tiny. And then I think maximum weekly deposit for older players is like 1600, 1700. I think it was like 1680 or something. It was a weird number.
At age, do you know what age you can change your name by deed poll in the UK?
I don't actually.
16.
Really?
Yeah, I got that from The Chase, which is a TV quiz show. So it's interesting that apparently you can change your name, get married,
join the army, get a tattoo,
emancipate yourself from parents, etc. at 16. But you're not deemed to have enough control of your money that you can bet what you want to on gambling.
Or vote, or drink.
Not vote at 16?
No.
Pretty sure you can. No?
No, no.
That's why I went for 16 on the... Is the voting age 18?
I think it's 18.
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah. They want to... there's a bill to reduce it to 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're allowed to join the army, get a tattoo, yada, yada, yada...
Can you not get a tattoo before 16?
No.
You can get your ears pierced, though, because you see, like, lots of little kids with their ears pierced age, like, 3.
Yeah. But that's, you know...
Imagine you see that in Glasgow. You see it in places in Essex, so you definitely see it in Glasgow.
What sort of aspersions are you casting here?
Let's just say there's certain... We're not. That's fine. I'm not going to open that kind of worms.
All right, but anyway, back to the restrictions before Ed's classism starts to scream rather than whisper. So maximum stakes capped at £2 per spin.
UK it's 18 actually for a tattoo. Wow.
Is it? Oh, bloody hell.
According to Google.
Okay.
Tattooing and Miners Act in 1969. Miners being MINOR rather than people who work down a coal mine. But carry on.
Yeah, we still had them then. Thanks, Thatcher.
Wow.
I'm reading a really good book called Killing Thatcher, which is about the Brighton bombing at the moment.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Just for balance, I would like to say, Maggie, what you did for this country, we should all be thankful. But we won't get
We're that. Not the BBC. We don't have to balance.
Yep, but I actually believe that. You know, the privatisations and stuff. It's fine. Let's just see. I mean, Labour's done fantastic for so far, this thing. Anyway, let's not get it.
Okay. So maximum winnings, 2,000, jackpots banned, mandatory cooling off period. So after, I think it's 90 minutes of play, you'd have to stop playing for 15 minutes.
Look, some of these things are good, strong regulations, which are important. But some of them, you just think it's just going to lead towards a... I mean, off the top of my head, you know, that to me looks like a channeling rate with those maximum stakes, etc. limited number of licenses, you're probably looking at 60 something, maybe 70 something, like depending on actually what gets passed.
Yeah, this is it. It's important to state that this is in the draft phase. And I suppose what's going to be interesting as well is how much Austria will have looked at other markets. Like, there's a good op-ed baller called Arthur Stadler in IGB in the wake of this, iGamingBusiness.com. And he kind of makes the point.
Just spelling out your website name has put you off your entire point that you wanted to do. I hope it was worth it, because I'm sure everyone on this podcast, all six people that listen, know what your website is called.
That many?
Look, I had an email from someone saying, oh, I love your RTTS podcast. I loved how they shortened it. And it's got me up to speed on the sector, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, wow, either there's more listeners than we thought, or what seems even less likely is that some of our subscribers have realised that if they say they like the podcast, they're going to get quicker responses. Which means they must know about the podcast in the first case. But anyway, I clearly responded to them straight away.
Yeah.
Yes, on the iGamingBusiness.com website.
Yeah, on the iGamingBusiness.com website. And he points out that Austria, for having waited, has a lot of different kind of use cases to look at from across Europe.
They do, but they've chosen these deposit limits like the Netherlands, which has 53% channelization, or under 50%, some people
dip to, under 50 in the first half of 25, is that right?
Depends, I think it's just above 50, but either way, 50%. Then you've got Germany, which is even lower, especially for iGaming.
Yep.
Which, you know, whether they're looking at that, but, you know, you're talking about maximum spins and stuff like that, like, it's not looking as the best examples of things to look at, let's be honest.
No, it's not. But it is a draft. This is the starting point. And the timescale isn't quite clear. I mean, one of the things that Imogen picked up on was that it is under, I think it's, they want to set up a new regulatory authority by or around 2030. So it doesn't feel like it's going to be the fastest moving process, does it?
No, but look, time flies by and things go quickly. Like, my final thought on Austria, as you so kindly asked, is, you know, it's got some great places to visit. Decent beer, decent ski resorts. Big fan of schnitzel. However, if you're there for a week, you just want something, like, you just want something less heavy, less greasy. You know, it is very fried, isn't it, and heavy food in Austria. It's not quite like France or something like that. You know, and sometimes it just means you just want something light, like a Caesar salad.
A Caesar salad? Okay.
Speaking of Caesar.
Speaking of Caesar, fucking hell.
Seamless.
That was the worst. The absolute worst.
What, seriously?
Yes.
How would you get from Austria to Caesars?
I mean, I was wondering where you were going with your weird food diatribe.
And everything I said is true. I generally believe all of that. Love schnitzel, which is too much to have, you know, for an entire week. And sometimes you just want a Caesar salad. Even though you know that with the calories of the dressing and everything else,
totally offsets the fact that it's a salad.
So it's not actually really any healthier for you, but it just tastes good.
Yeah, I don't like having the chicken on it. That's not, you know, they're always big on chicken.
Yeah, I mean, you can have it without chicken, but I don't see why. You're just paying for lettuce leaves and crouton, but anyway.
Mm.
Well, before Caesars, as you didn't like my little segue, the other interesting thing that's happened this week, which is why I think we're now slowly moving away from these monopolies. So you've obviously got Alberta, which is launching in Canada, Finland moving away from the monopoly, New Zealand are kind of opening up the online casino, albeit keeping the monopoly on sports. Austria, obviously looking to transition a bit. You've still got Poland holding out on the iCasino, but Norway seems the outlier. Mm. Now, we talked about all those players that got told that they had won this big multi-million-pound prize, Euro, Norwegian krone, whatever, and that was a bit of a disaster. Now, what's just come out is that for a few days in February, thousands of players, I think 5,000 players for 23,000 bets, were able to play on games without actually using any real money. So not only is this kind of gone against, obviously, any controls that they're going to have. So the idea of this monopoly being you can protect players and you have all the controls that commercial market can't. All of that got messed up. Winnings were paid out. They don't know if the winnings then included the stake, given the stake wasn't actually any real money. There were massive restrictions on free bets. So these can't, so that's kind of gone against all of, I mean, these weren't meant to be free bets, but again, against all the regulations. And they still don't know how much it's cost them in losses, in what the players have spent. They still haven't worked it out. So they still can't get to the bottom of it. I mean, it is a complete... I know it's going to get blanked out by your... I don't know how I've pissed him off so much, the guy who you now use to edit this, who blanks out every single word that's... But it's a shit show.
Yeah, no, it is a shit show.
Monopolies are not necessarily the best. Yeah, I get what you have. Monopoly, you should have more control.
No,
but things still, mistakes still happen. And are they the best people to be running the Norwegian gambling space?
I think that's a, yeah, that's a point worth making, but very quickly, because I need to make a call before my next call. Caesars. So Tilman Fertitta has agreed a $5.7 billion deal to acquire the business. Obviously, he owns Golden Nugget casino chain through the Landry's business. Been in the offing for a while. We kind of knew it was happening, but I suppose, you know, I suppose kind of very quickly, any initial thoughts on this from my side? It seems like, it seems like a good idea. I think Caesars has never really recovered from, you know, the bankruptcy. It's kind of, it's ticked along. Don't quite see what the shape of that ultimate business will be. I suspect some properties from the Landry side and from the Caesars side will be divested. Certain strip ones will be kept in. Really curious about the future of the Caesars digital business, because you would think that could be ripe for a spin-off or a sale, or it could be kept within.
Yeah, I mean, the Caesars digital business is interesting. I mean, yeah, I think I'd split Caesars broadly into the kind of three categories. You've got some of the strip, the kind of higher quality parts of it, destination, then you've got lots of regional casinos, and then you have the online business digital. So if you look at their share in the US, it's been pretty, you know, up and down a bit, but similar, it's kind of constant. It hasn't really gone down significantly or up significantly. It's around 5%, but within that it's around 3.5% for sports and 7% or so for iGaming. Unsurprising that it is, you know, trending better for iGaming than sports. But beyond that, the only, I suppose, slight issue with the spin-off of it is I don't think they use the digital business as just a kind of cash generation economic division in itself. But it's the data they get from the players that they can then use to cross-sell, go into their land-based business.
Course.
And so that's, I think, an important bit where if you spin it off, would the kind of cross-sell impact of that get fully captured? I think it's quite a tactical one for them. Which, remember when they went into New York? And they spent a ton of money on promo.
Oh, yeah, insane amount of money. Initially.
And everyone thought, you know, they're just ridiculous. Yeah, but if that allowed them to kind of capture some of the players initially, and then the high value players, and then you can use that to, you know, that data, you know, no one else really had data at the time on who the high value players were in New York. No. You know, they've got properties in Pennsylvania, they've got properties in Atlantic City, you know, all around there. So, you know, that's incredibly useful information.
Yeah. But on that note, we are definitely over time. It's been lovely to do this after an enforced break.
Yeah, a couple of things to talk about next week. World Cup upcoming.
Yep. We'll talk about the World Cup.
And speaking of something with Caesars and casinos and New York, the first casino in New York City.
Yes, opened. Resorts World.
And the numbers are, unsurprisingly, very strong. And we can talk more about those next week.
A teaser, I love it. All right, everyone, thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you in the next episode of Right to the Source with Robin Harrison and Ed Birkin.
Hang on, hang on. You never told me who Ren was.
Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, you never told me who they were.
They're a cartoon. They're a 90s cartoon. All the listeners will know who Ren and Stimpy were.
I doubt it. Okay, good.
They will. Well,
thank you for listening. And let us know if you knew who Ren and Stimpy were.
Thanks, everyone.